from a do-or-die trip into the South Pacific. And the same with his brother, and the brother who didn't come home from France. And to see the tears streaming out of their eyes. That's all I need. That's all I need. And so, yesterday, on one of the Sunday news shows, this week with George the Traitor Stephanopoulos, Pat Robertson shows up. Pat Robertson, that's right, he's another Nobu veteran. He was a liquor supply officer during the Korean conflict. And he went on from hustling liquor in the military to hustling old ladies for their social security checks in the right-wing religion industry. This is the guy who first hired Jim and Tammy Baker, for God's sakes. This is the guy who thought it was a really cool idea to build a water slide for Jesus. And he said that the federal judges appointed under Article 3 of the United States Constitution by the president, a vast majority of whom have been appointed by Republican presidents. Federal judges, Pat Robertson said, are more serious a threat to America than Al-Qaeda and the September 11th terrorists. Over 100 years, I think the gradual erosion of the consensus that's held our country together is probably more serious than a few bearded terrorists who fly in the building. I'm going to start speaking in tongues in a minute. I think we've controlled Al-Qaeda, Robertson said, but warned of erosion at home. Damn fool, erosion, something farmers worry about when the hard rains come. The judges are creating a tyranny of oligarchy. And Stephanopoulos confronted him. And his claim that an out-of-control liberal judiciary is the worst threat of... Listen, he said that the judges are the worst threat than anything America has faced in the last 400 years. Worse than Nazi Germany. Worse than the Empire of Japan. Worse than the Civil War. And he said, yes, I really believe that. I think they are destroying the fabric that holds our nation together. S.O.B. Pat Robertson, you S.O.B. Spit in the face of two dead World War II uncles of mine, spit in my father's face, my uncle, my living uncle's face, my other living uncle's face. What a dirty, rotten, doggone it. There are times when you want to refer to the legitimacy of somebody like this guy's parentage, and I just don't want to do it. Oh, but Lord, he is illegitimus, Pat Robertson, you rotten illegitimus. A bunch of Republican-appointed judges are worse than Hitler. Oh, but I'm the hater. Illegitimus. Sorry, rotten illegitimus. And our friend Shirley emailed in earlier saying, Bob, I just heard that Pat Robertson was on Meet the Press or some other Sunday show. It was George Stephanopoulos yesterday. And he said that liberals are more of a threat to America than Hitler, Stalin, and Al-Qaeda. Can you believe this? Well, 1, 2, 3, 4 syllables. Figure them out for yourself. What the hell is wrong with this? Shirley's upset. What kind of person would say a thing like that? You seem like an intelligent man. Thanks, Shirley. Could you explain to me why the conservatives are so very afraid of liberals? Why do they hate and fear us so much? And how they turn out to be the wrong or the way they are? I'm so glad I'm not a conservative. It must be hell on earth for them to go through life carrying around so much hate and fear. Well, surely there is hate and fear, but this is all a charade. Much of it is a mask for what can only be called their outright desire to overturn our constitutional form of government, and they mask it with complaints of fear and this dire kind of bug spray that Robertson. But you know, for God's sakes, this is Pat Robertson. You got to remember, this is a guy who sat on national television and said that those few bearded terrorists who fly into buildings. He said that they flew those planes into the buildings because there are lesbians and gay men and transgendered people in America, and that people for the American way who defend the First Amendment from religious monsters like this illegitimate Robertson are the reasons the buildings fell. Sorry, syphilitic son of a sea cook. It is nothing short of the outright destruction of the American way of life as we know it, our constitutional republic, and they want it replaced with a theocracy. And they're angry, and they will kill, and they will maim, and they will do anything in the world to grab the power that they think they are entitled, simply because they read some Elizabethan English translations of a madman and think that it constitutes a reason to kill the whole world. Damn them. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On.
Head On. Around the block, just up your street, where the neighbors you should meet.
When you leave a job, why not take your retirement savings with you? Now you can roll over your 401k with someone who's always been there for you. Someone you can count on. Someone like Maria Dooley in Richwood, Richina Echo in Hinton, or Herb Garlitz in Beckley. Your State Farm agents. Whether you're changing jobs, between jobs, or retiring, consider rolling over your 401k with State Farm. Then, no matter where your career takes you, your 401k money will be with the people who know you and your plans for the future. Call State Farm agents Maria Dilley in Richfield, Regina Echo in Hinton, or Herb Garlitz in Beckley, and ask about a tax-deferred 401k rollover. State Farm, providing insurance and financial services. Consult your tax or legal advisor for specific advice.
The 12th Annual Beckley Raleigh County Chamber of Commerce Business Show, with over 75 business exhibits on display. Find out what businesses have to offer in Beckley Raleigh County. Network with area business representatives and take advantage of many business show special offers. Free admission, free parking, door prize drawings, exhibitor drawings and giveaways. Thursday, May 5th, 10 a.m. till 5 p.m. Support the Beckley Raleigh County Chamber of Commerce members. They support your community. For more information, call 252-7328.
If suddenly you're numb or weak on one side, limb, or face,
it could be a stroke. Get help. Don't wait.
Maybe it's a loved one suddenly slurring your speech or dizzy.
Call 911 and get medical help quickly.
Blacks have a higher occurrence. Do you want to know more?
Call 1-888-4-STROKE or visit www.strokeassociation.org. Time lost is brain lost.
A public service message brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
West Virginia's only live nighttime talker, Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. 21 minutes after 8 o'clock. The phone number is 252-6200. Outside Beckley, it's 800-620-WWNR. That's 9967. And to the phones indeed. Jim. Hey, Jim, you're Head On.
Good evening.
How are you?
Fine. Yourself?
Doing pretty good.
Well, I feel like my 401k has rolled over me.
Why's that?
I don't know. Case of the Fantods. What can I say? You know,
those Fantods will get you, Jim.
Pardon me?
Those Fantods will get you.
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, you know, if the Fantods don't get you, something else will. This daylight saving time is just killing me. But anyway, what you were saying about Mr. Robertson and these people, you know who they remind me of?
Go ahead.
They remind me of John Iceland and his wife in The Manchurian Candidate.
Oh, without a doubt.
I mean, you know, there are 290 state communists in the State Department. There are 157 communists in the State Department. And finally, he asked his wife, he said, I just can't keep the number right. So she sees a bottle of Heinz 57 ketchup, and she says, you've done 57, Johnny.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are 57 card-carrying communists in the State Department. And, you know, these people, like Pat Robertson and his fellow travelers and some of the ones that you mentioned, to me, are just the Iceland of the current times in which we live.
Well, I guess, but the, I guess,
mean, they are more dangerous, as they were referred to in the film by that senator who was shot, than any agent in the pay of the Soviet government.
I think you're absolutely right. I personally, you know,
and I don't know what their objectives are, Bob. I mean,
Jim, their objective,
I think it's something beyond that.
No, their objective is that they are mostly, in large part, quiet little fellow travelers with the likes of Opus Dei and the Christian Identity Movement that wants to form a federal government that I guess the closest thing would be in American history, the government of the Massachusetts Bay Colony in its earliest incarnations.
Well, Bob, that may, you know, I don't know yet. I haven't figured it out. When I do, I'll let you know. But that may be their means. But I'm not sure if it's their end.
Well, no, you're absolutely right. The end is the compulsion. They want to compel the return of Christ because they believe all this eschatological millennial bug spray that has been shown time and again to be absolutely irrelevant, bad scholarship, and just
well,
stupid.
He doesn't operate according to their schedule. And according to their timetable.
No, he does. Jim, they believe he does. They really do.
No, they could.
They do.
I don't really.
You have, no, no, you.
They really believe that.
You haven't.
Honestly and truly, Mr. Kincaid, I really and honestly and truly believe that the leaders, some of the followers may, but the leaders of this thing, I don't think they believe what they're saying themselves. I believe they've got such a racket going, I'll be honest with you.
Jim, I don't care if it's
false. For being honest, that's to believe.
Yeah, but apply Occam's razor to it, Jim. Falwell, Robertson, Kennedy, Dobson, they all have enough money to collectively burn herds upon herds of sopping wet elephants, okay?
Okay.
So it can't be money they're after. We know they're after power. But again, you want to know the end for which they seek the power.
Okay.
Now, one of those ends is going to be the absolute dictatorial control of the United States. But
well,
again, an end,
I should identify with.
An end has to follow from that. Why would you want to have dictatorial control of the United States? To get money, they've already got it. To get power, they've already got that too. So you can't help if you apply Occam's razor. The simplest answer, no matter how crazy it sounds, is more than likely the correct one. And that is that they do believe this millennialist garbage, this stuff that was invented by John Darby in the 19th century in England, they believe it, and they honest to God think that they can, because they are so out of their minds, they think they can compel the final confrontation in which Christ returns, and they finally get their heart's desire, to wit, to get to kill them some Jews with the approval of Jesus.
You can't be serious.
My hand to God, I'm so serious, Jim. This is what they want. Take some time on your computer when you're online. Go read about the Christian Identity Movement. Read them, because that's what these people are. From the Dominionists to the Christian Identity Movement, that is what these people seek. And they believe, because they believe this eschatological millennialist crap, hogwash, because they believe this, they think if they're here when Jesus comes back, that finally Jesus is going to stand there and haul every Jew in front of them and say, confess my name, and when the Jew doesn't do it, then Jesus looks at Pat and says, stab him. And they bring another one up. And see, here's the cool part. If you're really into killing Jews, like Robertson has said he is, then and you read this garbage in Revelations the way that he reads it, only 144,000 Jews are going to confess Christ. That means that he and his evil minions get to kill the rest of all those millions.
Well, how come it's going to be them? I thought that, you know, God have other people in his employ to take care of such tasks?
No, 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 no. They're the only ones in God's employ, Jim. You got to get your head wrapped around that one. It's like the old gag where the two good Christians, having lived long and prosperous and Christian lives, finally go to heaven. St. Peter escorts them through the gates, and he's showing them around, and he says, over there, you know, over there's the Episcopals, and the Christians wave, and the Episcopals wave, and he says, and over there's the Catholics, and the Catholics wave, and the Christians wave, and over there's the Nazarenes, and they wave, and the Nazarenes wave, and over there's the Presbyterians, and they wave, and the Presbyterians wave, and he says, and there's the Southern Baptist, and they get ready to wave, and he says, put your hand down. They think they're the only ones up here.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that before.
That's what we're dealing with. They think that they are, these people, and Robertson and Falwell both come out of that Southern Baptist tradition. They think that they are the only, they are, for God's, they are the anointed of Almighty Jehovah is what they think they are.
Oh, that's just hogwash.
Yes, it is, but they believe it all the way down to the cores of their toenails, they believe it. Because it has made them wealthy beyond their wildest dreams.
Well, the places where I fear the influence of people like that most are some of the impact, some of the impact it's having on the current government of this country and some of the policies it is pursuing.
Jim, they
now,
think
that's where I become very, very, you know, these people can believe anything they want to.
They think that, Jim, that's it. You got to understand the monstrous, magnificent, the hugeness of it. They think they have that control in the government today because God wants them to have it and has delivered the government unto them.
Well, I mean, you know, honestly and truly, with people in their control, some of their minions, they almost do. I mean, you know, now he did declare war on the judiciary yesterday on George Stephanopoulos' weekly program.
Yes, he did.
I saw that.
Yeah.
And I was just, you know.
So you can confirm that I'm not making this up.
Oh, I saw it. I saw it, Bobby. I saw it. Oh, no, no.
Okay.
I never doubt what you said. You know, I know you too well as far as from your past record, which is one of veracity and, you know. Basically, I can take what you say and put it in the bank, and that's no problem.
Well, there are other people that aren't willing to do that, but I thank you for backing me up on it. Jim, we got to roll.
I did have something to tell you, though.
Okay, quick.
Well, I was in the grocery store the other day, and I had eaten some quesadillas,
mm-hmm.
and something happened, an accident, so to speak.
Yeah?
And this woman had the nerve to ask me, sir, did you break wind? And I told her, I certainly did. I don't always smell like this.
God bless you, Jim.
You're welcome.
It takes that's a mark of a true man.
Well, honey, what would you do?
Yeah, about the same thing. Yes,
I said I certainly did.
Yes, ma'am, and being a human being, on average, I do it 14 to 15 times a day.
But I have the nerve, the temerity. Take care.
You too, Jim. Thanks.
You're welcome.
All right, and more of your phone calls when we come back. Please stick around. We got an open line if you want it. 252-6200 outside Beckley, 800-620-9967. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Stands for democracy throughout the world, right? George W. says so in nearly every speech he gives. He points to Iraq, Lebanon, the Ukraine, and other distant lands, declaring that if people living under autocratic leaders rise up, quote, America will walk at your side. So, when hundreds of thousands of people rose up in April against an elitist autocratic regime, pouring into the streets to demand an unfettered democratic vote for the presidency of their land, surely George leapt to their side, right? No. It seems that democracy is a relative value for the Bushites, to be applied only where it fits their ideological view and corporate agenda. The Mexican people, for example, need not apply. As in many countries just to our south, there's a growing popular rebellion in Mexico against the self-serving elites who rule there for years. It's a rebellion that repudiates the free market nostrums of corporate globalization that have further enriched the corporate elites and further impoverished the many. The mayor of Mexico City, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, has become a rallying point for this democratic rebellion. He has criticized NAFTA, helped workers and the poor, challenged the corporate regime of Mexico's current president, and become the most popular politician in the country. He is by far the leading candidate to be Mexico's next president. This populist has so unnerved the moneyed establishment that it is attempting to imprison López Obrador on trumped-up charges and prevent him from running for president. All across Mexico, this dictatorial action has prompted outrage and spurred the new democratic movement. This is Jim Hightower saying, so has George W. assured these democracy fighters in our neighboring land that America walks at their side? No, he's ignored them, leaving it to a spokesman to dismiss their popular protests as an internal Mexican affair.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. Hey, libraries need your help. They are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library. So make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from a Mac.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Good evening, this is Carl Mack, WWNR News. A Medicare official says beneficiaries at a Beckley nursing home will no longer receive Medicare payments after deficiencies have been uncovered at the facility. Medicare officials gave public notice Thursday that on May 8th, the Medicare agreement between Heartland of Beckley and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services will be terminated. Timothy Hawk with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services says CMS has determined that Heartland is not in compliance with Medicare requirements for long-term care facilities. If Heartland closes, Medicare and Medicaid would cover patients admitted before May 8th for up to 30 days. Hawk says a small number of Heartland's 181 patients are Medicare eligible, while most are Medicaid beneficiaries. But he says Medicaid services also end when Medicare agreements are terminated. Coal companies and equipment sellers are concerned about a shortage of mammoth tires. Steve Walker, president of Walker Machinery and Bell, was ready to sell four 200-ton dump trucks with price tags as high as $3 million, but then the orders were canceled. The coal company planning to open a new mine site was ready to buy, just couldn't find the 12-foot-tall tires to get the trucks rolling. The mammoth tires, which can cost up to $30,000 each, are in short supply worldwide, and that leaves earth-moving industries such as the coal industry in a real bind. Governor Manchin is scheduled to sign bills, or was scheduled today to sign bills into law that would encourage the healthy lifestyles in public schools and control the spread of methamphetamine. The meth bill would place controls on medications that contain pseudoephedrine, which is the key ingredient in making methamphetamine. The general public is invited to weigh in as the State Board of Education continues its search for a new superintendent of schools. The board has created an internet link allowing people to submit comments on what characteristics the new superintendent should have. That's the news. Now the forecast for this evening. Mostly cloudy, temperatures now in the mid-30s. Tonight cloudy and chilly with a low near 32. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, high near 50. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy, cold again, low near 34. A little bit nicer on Wednesday, though. Mostly sunny with temperatures in the low 60s. And then by this weekend, we should be sunny with temperatures at least in the upper 60s and close to 70. For News Talk 620, this is Carl Mack. When you need to know.
WWNR Beckley.
Back to radio for the rest of us. Head on.
Welcome back. 22 and a half minutes before 9 o'clock here in beautiful uptown Beckley. The god-awful sleet has gone away. Sleet. May 2nd. Sleet. Let's go straight to the phones. 252-6200 outside Beckley, 800-620-9967. Michelle is with us. Hey, Michelle. Thanks for holding. Michelle.
Hello.
Hello.
I wanted to thank Jim for his flagrant edition of West Virginia Home Companion.
Well said.
I can barely hear you, but I'm going to go ahead anyway.
Okay. We'll let us tinker with things here. Is that better? Better?
No.
Not better?
No, it's my phone.
Okay.
And I've got nine dogs barking out back.
I understand. They've got something treed.
I'm going to ask you, in one of your segments, you were saying, give me a better word for whining.
I was whining?
Well, I don't want to say whining, so give me a better word.
Complaining?
Complaining. Okay, you were complaining about somebody in the Little League not following the rules regarding salutations and thongs and flags and, right?
Yeah, more in reference to my upbringing than anything else.
And in the same segment, you were complaining about the weather.
Yes.
What do you think is stronger? What do you think is going to win out in the end? Rules regarding salutations and songs, flags, etc., or the weather?
I didn't really see it as a competition between the two, Michelle.
Well, you don't?
No. I really don't. I mean, we were all soaked.
Well, yes, but the weather is the stronger entity, wouldn't you say?
Okay.
And rules and regulations regarding salutations.
Okay, so you're telling me this kid didn't have enough common good sense to take
shelter? No. I'm not saying anything about any person. I am saying something about the way we look at rules and salutations and all that stuff, as opposed to paying attention to the weather.
Oh, this kid wasn't paying attention to anything, Michelle.
Well, honey.
I mean, he was just wandering around. Literally, lost.
Honey, yes, you're missing my point.
Okay, I'm not trying to.
Well, no, you're obviously caught up in the whole going along with the rules instead of paying attention to the weather.
Well, the weather was what the weather was, Michelle. It was pouring down rain, and it had been for about an hour. I mean, there was nothing new in it.
Okay, I just can't articulate my point. Okay, I have a question to ask. I need to know your opinion on this.
Okay.
What do you think about libertarians?
Libertarians?
Yes.
Scratch a libertarian and you'll find a ticked off Republican.
No. Don't give me...
No, I mean, that's the truth.
Tell me what you think. I can't think the way you think. I need to know what you think.
From a social standpoint, I can understand some of what they do. From a social standpoint, you know, live and let live. Your neighbor's your neighbor. Let your neighbor mind their business. You mind yours, and we'll all be happier for it.
So that, okay, what about the...
Political libertarianism, the economic libertarianism is generally thought to be pretty hard right-wing.
What is that?
Well,
no, I'm not up on the right-wing, left-wing...
Let's see... some libertarian thinking. Corporations should never pay taxes. Nobody should ever pay taxes. Libertarians.
Really?
Libertarians are really, really hot.
Libertarians think that nobody should pay taxes?
Well, I mean, not if you're a corporation. But libertarians, by and large, are really all hot and bothered and excited and really would love to see this national sales tax go into effect, where we eliminate the income tax and instead we pay all of our taxes at the cash register.
Right.
And, of course, you know, that would be great for, you know, wealthy America. It's not going to be so good for you.
Why?
Why? Now, because your income is going to go a lot. Boy, here's some tortured English on the way.
Yeah, I am.
A lot less further. Your income will go a lot less further with a national sales tax than it would go than it's going right now.
Why?
Why? Let's see. What's the sales tax right now? 6%?
Yeah.
Bump it up 15%.
Right, but my income is not going to be taxed.
That remains to be seen. I personally don't trust them.
But that's the right, and I don't trust it either. But isn't that the ideal?
Yeah. As far as I can tell from reading their propaganda, sure. But you know a libertarian would like to eliminate Social Security. Pure libertarianism.
Well, I didn't know that.
Pure libertarianism would eliminate Social Security. Pure libertarianism would eliminate Medicare, Medicaid. It's pure hateful free market economics.
Don't start putting in the hateful adjective.
It is hateful. It is absolutely hateful because it says, hey, Granny, if you're no good to the market.
I know, and
I'm trying to tell you. Because it's pure free marketism, it says, hey, Granny, you're no longer of
any. Why you got to color it if I'm just trying to learn about it? Just give me an outline.
All right, here's an outline. It's pure free marketism. It says, for instance, Michelle, hey, Granny, you're no longer of any use to the market. If you don't have enough money laying around to feed yourself, you need to go starve somewhere.
Get out.
Now, yes, Michelle, it's hateful. Because I consider that to be hateful conduct when we look at the elderly of our society and say, you're no longer productive,
okay,
you need to die.
Let's get off that, and let's go on to other things, like the, don't libertarians think that if you want to use drugs, you can go ahead and use drugs?
That's the social end of it, yeah. That's social libertarianism.
What do you think about that?
Personally, I don't find any social. Like I said, I can identify more with the social end of libertarianism than I can with the economic.
So go ahead.
Frankly, if we ended the drug prohibition tomorrow, we would probably be the better for it.
Because?
Because it is. Well, again, it comes back to market economics, doesn't it, Michelle?
I don't know. I'm asking you.
Well, the market. Go back and consider liquor prohibition, alcohol prohibition in America.
Right, right.
It made multimillionaires out of the likes of Al Capone, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and he was a criminal, and he was a mob boss long before there was prohibition. But he came to real power as a result of prohibition. So it's that self.
It also make a millionaire out of a lot of other people not so publicized?
Sure it did. It made a lot of money for a lot of people who were involved in the illegal alcohol trade. It absolutely did. And it wasn't the alcohol that made them rich, it was the prohibition on alcohol that made them rich.
Exactly.
So if you've got, I think the debate right now is marijuana.
I don't think this would be
although a pure social
debate about marijuana.
Although again, coming back to your topic, a pure social libertarian, Michelle, would say legalize the pot, legalize the crack, the coke, the heroin, the meth, the acid, the mescaline, the what have you.
Yes.
Because as long as people are using it for their own personal use and doing no one else any harm, what the hell business is it of the government?
Yes, but then what happened? We would have more deaths.
Would we?
Or we wouldn't.
Well, now I can't speak to it with a great degree of expertise, but it's my understanding that there are government-subsidized programs for heroin addicts in other countries, in which
in which
heroin addicts lead otherwise normal and productive lives.
Absolutely.
And they have a prescription for their heroin. They go to the chemist, the pharmacist, whatever. They get it. They get their fix. And they work at banks, and they work at insurance companies, and they work in, you know, hither, thither, and yon.
So.
And they don't have to knock off granny for the price of a fix.
So you don't have as much of a problem with social libertarian.
No, I don't.
That you do with what?
I can identify more readily with social libertarianism than I can with economic libertarianism.
Okay, explain to me the economics.
No, it's what we just went over. It's the granny's no good to society anymore, therefore, you know, who needs Social Security? The free market will take care of her, or granny will die. One or the other will happen, no big deal.
Ah. Well, I'm glad I called.
I'm always glad you call, Michelle.
You always answer my questions. You know, you give me such a perspective. I appreciate you.
No, it's no trouble at all. And I'm glad to know you're here.
I'm so glad that I got you when I turned on my radio at 8 o'clock tonight.
Well, see, it's going to be fun for a couple of more months
now.
Well,
when I hang up, I'm going to lose you, but...
Well, yeah, we've powered down by now. We're almost spanning the block.
So can I hold up?
Yeah, sure.
Thanks.
Sure. Hold on. And keeping it rolling, Jose. Hey, Jose, you're head on. Thank you for waiting.
Bob.
How are you?
Well, coping.
Good. That's most as we can be expected to do.
You want rumors or philosophy or... can I tell you a rumor?
Yeah, please do.
Gas company come to the front of the house, fix a leak. One of the employees said, you know, there's a small nation going to bomb the U.S. And he says it's going to be a bigger nation that supports them.
Okay.
And what we just heard from Mr. Hightower, and I told him back, I says, well, all our parts are coming from Mexico and China. I says, that's two, a big and a small power. And what we just heard on the radio there, how the rebellion there in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's going to happen, Bob. And I know Pat Robertson is not backed by Jehovah.
No, he's not.
So, I wouldn't want to be in his shoes, Bob.
No, I wouldn't either.
And
he has worshipped for a long time at the altar of Mammon, Jose.
Say it, and people like that, I wouldn't want to be wearing these garments.
No, sir.
Well, Bob, I don't know... if the gas man, see, there's spirits today.
Mm-hmm.
True spirit you listen to,
mm-hmm.
and a false spirit. And you don't know how to judge things.
That makes some sense.
And, I just hope you can keep in control.
I'm trying.
And I'll talk to you later.
All right, thanks, Jose.
And Jehovah bless.
And you as well, sir, always.
Thanks,
take care.
Bye.
There is some creepy stuff on the horizon. What Jim Hightower had to say about Mexico, Bush will do everything in his power to support Vicente Fox. Although the movement of the people of Mexico is clearly in favor of someone new. What's the man's name? Obrador? Greg Palast had an excellent article, swing by gregpalast.com, about Ecuador and what we have done to them. They're sitting on 2 billion, really? They're sitting on 2 billion barrels of oil, and yet they're one of the poor, because of the economic manipulations of things like the World Bank, as run by, in large part, us, you, dot, S, dot. They're one of the poorest countries in South America. Bad things, man. Wasn't that Dennis Hopper? Yeah, bad things, man. You saw, of course, the Sturm und Drang about the North Korean missile test. But if you weren't paying attention very closely, you might have, you might be forgiven for missing the part where they mentioned the fact that the missile they tested yesterday is, what, 15-year-old technology? For all intents, that missile that North Korea launched yesterday has roughly a 100-kilometer... Come on, everybody, do your metric conversions in your heads. Roughly a 100-kilometer range. What? I can't do the metric conversions in my head. They wouldn't stick. Something like a little more or less than 50 miles or so. Shh, don't tell anybody. Kim Jong whacked in the head. Scared the world to death yesterday by test firing a Scud. It is literally the same technology that he sold to Saddam Hussein prior to the run-up to Daddy Bush's Gulf War I. Ooh, Kim Jong-il fired a Scud. And now, have you seen, I mean, are you paying attention to this ridiculous little war of insults? It's playground stuff. George W. Milk a Horse, hey, his wife said it, I didn't, announced that Kim Jong-il is a terrible tyrant and he's got his people in concentration camps, and the State Department just sort of had their eyes roll back and collectively in their head. What did he say? Well, that's going to help. To which the North Koreans replied, well, we won't be coming back to the negotiation tables until George W. Milks a Horse apologizes. Real good. And what, Condoleezza Rice came out and said, no, really, they're really, really nasty. It's a brutal regime, and he's a brutal dictator who... Now, let's see, we've already done Gaster on Gassy's own people. He's got mass... No, we did mass graves. He's short. He's really short. At which point the North Korean leadership said, well, that's the last straw. We're going to test fire a Scud into the Sea of Japan. Oh, my God. This is really, this is playground stuff. This is shameful. We're in a war of words with a guy who wears lifts in his shoes and likes to watch porn. Wait a minute. Now it all makes sense. Because he's in a war of words with a guy who drives golf carts instead of horses and likes to hold hands with Arabs. Oh, I hate this. Crazy people are driving us to the brink of war, and the normal ones are going to have to fight it again. I hate this. Really, I do. And then, of course, lest we forget, we've got further confirmation now. But yeah, turns out that Johns Hopkins study that was published by The Lancet last October about the 100,000 dead in Iraq, turns out that's pretty close to spot on. And those are 100,000 that we killed most of them. And it just doesn't make dinner sit so good, does it? But of course, if you don't believe the statistics, then the statistics will go away. You know, we've talked about it before. It's the Peter Pan approach to politics, life, and everything. Well, I don't like those facts and figures. I'm not going to believe them. So therefore, they're not real. For my part, I could never really get to that without chemical help. Some people do it like that. Now that's talent. And this is Head On. And I'm Bob Kincaid.
takes to help a homeless father find a job and home for his family. You have the ability to assist a woman who can't afford the medicine she needs to live and the home she can't live without. You can choose to make a difference in our community and improve the lives of so many people in need. Support Volunteers of America, and you can help improve the lives of nearly 2 million Americans each year with programs and services that help individuals and families overcome their challenges to become as independent as possible. Support the programs that are working in our community. Contact Volunteers of America today. Call 1-800-899-0089 or visit our website at www.volunteersofamerica.org. In 1805, Lewis and Clark described in their journals a country teeming with wildlife.
Bison as far as the eye can see. Rivers churning with fish.
They wrote of scenes of endless beauty and of meeting more than 100 nations of American Indian whose lives were one with our environment. Now, imagine what Lewis and Clark and the American Indians they met would say if they walked the trail today. Would they be pleased?
There are herds and homes where the buffalo once roamed.
Or would they feel differently?
Something must be done to save what's left of this great place.
As we commemorate the Lewis and Clark Bicentennial, we encourage you to consider what's been lost and what we can do to preserve what's left of the trail that still winds through us all. Walk with Lewis and Clark and see what you discover at www.lewisandclark200.org.
This is a public service message of the National Council of the Lewis and Clark Bicentennial, the Missouri Historical Society, and the Ag Council.
WWNR Beckley. Proud of over 50 years of broadcasting history. You can depend on us. News Talk 620. WWNR Beckley. It's 9 o'clock.
A public service message from Call to Recycle. Hi, this is Richard Karn. Recycling your own cell phone is a great thing to do for the environment. Visit calltorecycle.com or call toll-free 877-2-RECYCLE.
News Talk 620 WWNR, keeping you informed with Southern West Virginia's most accurate and dependable forecast.
Here's your forecast from the Weather Channel. It's looking partly cloudy and colder overnight, with lows from 38 to highs back in the mid-50s, which is a good 10 to 13 degrees below normal for this time of year. It's going to be otherwise partly cloudy, lows again in the mid to upper 30s Monday night, with fair skies ahead for Tuesday. Highs will range in the mid to upper 50s Tuesday and again on Wednesday. Thursday, look for a slight chance of rain, but afternoon highs near 55. This is meteorologist Mike Edwards from the Weather Channel.
Welcome back. 6 minutes after 9 o'clock. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. Michelle had a last question or comment. Hey, Michelle. Didn't want to cut you off there. Hey.
What do you think about the idea that they're going to raise Detroit, pull it under, and make farmland out of it?
Yeah, I heard that referenced on Jerry Doyle's program earlier this afternoon. If the land's not doing anything, and if the land can be made productive again, might not be a bad idea.
I think it's a great idea. What do you think everybody else is going to think about it?
Well, but the thing is, Michelle, that's it's really mathematics in the negative range, because even if you plow under some tear down some buildings and plow up some ground in Detroit, the real threat in this country comes from the fact that we lose farmland by the untold acres every day to put up more McMansions.
Yeah.
Terrible time hearing you, Michelle.
Yeah, right.
Okay, that's good. Wherever you're standing, stand there.
Oh, there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't move.
I can't stand up. My back is hurting me, so I'm sitting, but I'm leaning.
Okay.
But, yeah.
I mean, it's the and I remember a couple of political cycles back when everybody talked, you know, they talked such garbage on Al Gore because he was concerned about urban sprawl.
Right, but I think the resistance comes from those people who are
who are educated in the technology and not educated in the land.
Well, I think that's one way of putting it. I call it greed.
Well, yeah, it's greed for one thing, and then the other people have not greed, but all right, maybe it is greed for a totally different thing.
Okay.
They have a greed to make the land productive, and on the other hand, people have a need to make the land productive.
Well,
but in different ways.
Okay. Well, then maybe we classify it this way. The worst of the two is short-term, short-sighted greed. Because once you build your McMansion on that farmland...
No.
Then, no, once you've built your McMansion on that farmland, then whoever built it's going to get a lot of money out of it. Whoever sold it's going to get money out of it.
Right, right. But if you plow it under and you make it produce for the United States of America so we don't have to depend on anybody else...
Then it will have what it has had for 200 years, long-term real value.
Exactly.
So short-term greed versus farsightedness.
Okay, all right.
You see what I'm getting at? Okay.
That's what I wanted to say.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Do something for that back.
What?
I said do something for that back.
Yeah.
I hear that cabbage leaves, whole cabbage leaves, heated in the microwave and applied to sore muscles. Will go a long way toward pulling the soreness out.
Right. I thought I was going to have to pull some burdock.
Burdock is good.
The leaves, but I want the roots. Well, we can get into that conversation another time.
Okay. You take care, Michelle.
Perfect.
Bye now. Okay. I mentioned at the toward the top of the hour the resurgence of this Johns Hopkins study published in The Lancet. And I guess, you know, the Tinkerbell crowd thinks that The Lancet is the liberal media now, never mind that it's been publishing rock-solid medical science for, over 100 years? A lot more than 100 years? The Lancet was publishing when the Journal of the American Medical Association was still consisted largely of paper airplanes. Bob Herbert's column in the New York Times today, today being May the 2nd, the day after May Day. We weren't here for May Day. I've got some May Day music for you here. I think we'll play it on the way out when we come to this break. His column in the New York Times today is titled From Gook to Raghead. And it turns on his conversations with a young man, a 23-year-old fellow named Aiden Delgado. And Aiden Delgado is a veteran. He is a veteran of George Bush's war. And in reference to going off to Iraq, Bob Herbert writes about Mr. Delgado. He wasn't happy when, even because you see, Aiden Delgado had a father, and his father was in the diplomatic corps, and he grew up overseas, spent 8 years in Egypt, speaks Arabic, and is pretty well familiar with Muslim culture. So he says he wasn't happy when, even before his unit left the States, a top officer made wisecracks about the soldiers heading off to Iraq to kill some ragheads and burn some turbans. Mr. Delgado said of his commanding officer, he laughed, and everybody in the unit laughed with him. Bob Herbert writes, the officer's comment was a harbinger of the gratuitous violence that, according to Mr. Delgado, is routinely inflicted by American soldiers on ordinary Iraqis. All that Bob's going to be unpatriotic now. He's going to be un-American and talk about rotten things that gets done to them towel heads. Mr. Delgado said, quote, guys in my unit, particularly the younger guys, would drive by in their Humvee and shatter bottles. Listen carefully. This guy was there. This is not some report from Al Jazeera. This is a guy who was there. Would drive by in their Humvee and shatter bottles all over the heads of Iraqi civilians passing by. They'd keep a bunch of empty Coke bottles in the Humvee to break over people's heads. You know, these aren't the little, sugar bottles that you see in the barroom fights in the movies. Coke bottle broken over your head will screw you up good. They'd keep a bunch of empty Coke bottles in the Humvee to break over people's heads. He said he had confronted guys who were his friends about this practice. I said to them, what the hell are you doing? Like, what does this accomplish? And they responded just completely openly. They said, look, I hate being in Iraq. I hate being stuck here. And I hate being surrounded by Hajis. Haji is the troop's term of choice for an Iraqi. It's used the way gook was used in Vietnam, because the first rule of war is the first thing you do is dehumanize your enemy, even if you don't know who your enemy is. Mr. Delgado said he had witnessed incidents in which an Army sergeant lashed a group of children with a steel Humvee antenna, and a Marine corporal planted a vicious kick in the chest of a kid about 6 years old. There were many occasions, he said, when soldiers or Marines would yell and curse and point their guns at Iraqis who'd done nothing wrong. Mr. Delgado, an extremely thoughtful and serious young man, balked at the entire scene. It drove me into a moral quagmire, he said. I walked up to my commander and gave him my weapon. I said, I'm not going to fight. I'm not going to kill anyone. This war is wrong. I'll stay, I'll finish my job as a mechanic, but I'm not going to hurt anyone. And I want to be processed as a conscientious objector. And of course, his unit called him traitor and coward, because they agreed with lashing little children with a Humvee antenna and cracking Coke bottles over people's heads who were doing nothing to them. Do you understand the things that we have done to our once proud military because George W. Bush lost his patience? Do you understand that it flows down from the top? Lindy England, that pride of West Virginia, pled guilty today in her court-martial and faces something on the order of 30 months in the stockade. Lindy England didn't do a damned thing that she did not have orders from the top to do. Lindy England did things to those Iraqi prisoners that did not induce organ failure or death, pursuant to the rules written up by none other than the man who is now the chief law enforcement officer of the United States, Alberto de Torquemada González. She didn't do a damn thing that wasn't approved by the Pentagon, by Rumsfeld, by General Ricardo Sanchez. But the thing is, here's the difference. Lindy England is a poor girl from West Virginia with equally poor judgment. And she was asleep that day they gave the lecture about the Nuremberg rules, and you need not obey an illegal order. And it wasn't all Charles Grainer, and it wasn't all Lindy England. Because you don't come up with all that material unless it is supplied to you from above. Oh yeah, we're doing rotten things to otherwise decent people in Iraq, and a bunch of them are Americans. And they're going to come home, and they're going to scream in their sleep. And marriages are going to break up, and there's going to be domestic violence, and there will be murders, and there will be homeless veterans on the street. And for every last rotten one of you people who went out and voted for George Bush, you bear the shame and you bear the responsibility in equal measure. And I don't know how you can carry the weight. And I would not trade places with you for all the money in the world. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Oh, For the girl next door, because I know where you can find her. Cupid.com is a place to meet women that live close by. Cupid.com isn't interested in compiling some big worldwide network. They're focused on putting you in touch with the cuties you pass on your way to work, people who share your same area code. Basic Cupid memberships are free with zero obligations. You can even apply to messages from board members, a service you usually pay for on other sites. You can remain anonymous and still put Cupid's auto match to work, locating women with your favorite traits and qualities. Bigger online dating sites show you a universe of women, which is perfect if you're into long-distance relationships. But Cupid.com shrinks that world to women right in your backyard, because the girl next door never lives three states away. Find your true love at Cupid.com, either online or one of our fine local hits.
Cupid.com. Advertising locally on great radio stations to bring people together for love.
Nearly 70 million Americans, men, women, the old, and the young, share a common enemy, arthritis. Make a difference in the fight against arthritis. Team up with Colony Drugs, the Arthritis Foundation, and Southern Communications for Beckley's second Arthritis Walk, Thursday, May 19th, on the McManus Rail Trail at New River Park. For fun, and help fight the nation's leading cause of disability, arthritis. Form a team with your friends and family. For details, call Colony Drug and Wellness Center at 252-5305. And join us May 19th for a walk in the park.
This is Dare, you're on the road again.
Oh, Ranger, I saw headlights and...
I understand.
Hey, see, you're working late, huh?
Yeah, Smokey and I were up thinking of ways to remind people to be responsible for fires they start.
So what you come up with?
We're going to make some radio commercials featuring a ranger and talking animals.
A little sophomoric, don't you think?
Yeah, so...
Remember, only you can prevent wildfires. A public service message from Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ag Council.
Radio for the real majority. Head on.
Welcome back. 20 minutes after 9 o'clock, Mary Lou is back with us. Hey, Mary Lou, you're head on. Mary Lou?
I have something to tell you.
Okay.
And I wonder what you thought about it, your opinion of it.
Okay.
I heard tonight that there's a well-known politician in Molly County. It's a lady.
Yes.
He's going to run against Senator Weeks.
Weeks?
Yeah.
Don't you mean Byrd?
No, Weeks. Senator Weeks.
Okay, I thought you were talking about Shelley Moore Capito being in Raleigh County.
No. Oh, I'm not worried about her. Nobody's going to beat Byrd. She can't beat Byrd.
Okay. You kind of took me unawares, Mary Lou.
No, maybe I didn't say it plain enough, Bob. I just heard tonight she's going to do it, not... I not only think I know she can beat Senator Weeks and Bill Wooten both.
Are we talking about Sally?
Uh huh. I know she can.
Oh, I think she can too. But the problem, I would.
Bob, I don't mean to interrupt.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Surely you don't think that. Surely, Catso can beat Senator Byrd, do you?
No, but I sure would like... I was only thinking about Shelley Moore because I know she was in town tonight for their little Lincoln dinner.
Yes, well, I feel like she will probably try to run against him, but it won't do her no good.
Well, you know, that other... the guy who's treasurer of the state Republican Party, Hiram Lewis, has already said he's going to run against Senator Byrd.
No, I haven't. For running against him. Nobody will ever beat him as long as his name's on that ticket.
I think you're probably right, because Senator Byrd draws from both sides of the aisle.
Yes. Well, he's helped too many people.
Somebody has got to boost Senator Weeks out of office, if only for the reason of taking that smear off of this county. Because, I mean, he's a laughing stock, Mary Lou. He really is. He's a laughing stock.
Well, what has he done for the county?
Well,
that's what you have said.
He almost managed to get In God We Trust painted on all the buildings. He almost got him to let the bed and breakfast smoke in bed. No, he's done nothing for the county. He's useless.
Well, what did he do for Pinecrest? Will you answer that?
Just dirt. All he did was spit on their name.
And what did he do for anything else he stuck his nose in?
The one thing he's been particularly good at is, again, embarrassing this county. I mean, he's just not a very intelligent man. And we certainly need somebody better. We need somebody better, Mary Lou, but I'll tell you what, I'm loath to suggest that it be Sally Sussman, because Sally Sussman's the last good member of the House of Delegates that the 27th District has.
I know it. And the one that I wanted to run, I found out, is not going to run. The one who almost got it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I tell
John Wooten,
yeah, John.
He said he wouldn't run.
Well, and
I heard that tonight.
I can understand that. But do you see what I'm saying? I mean, we got to have at least one decent delegate. And
Sally has helped a lot of people.
Yeah.
She will listen to you. She came out here to all those meetings on the road.
And she really, I mean, she means what she says, and she does what she tells her she'll do. But you know, to sacrifice that House of Delegates seat for an unknown, another one of these Democrats in name only that might sneak up, that's just that really gags me, because the other thing is, I don't know that she would necessarily want that Senate seat, because from watching this last session, Mary Lou, the West Virginia Senate is just a shame. There's no good going on there.
They're not getting anything done.
Well, they're getting things done, but they're getting the wrong things done.
I know. But anyway, I just wondered how you felt about that.
Well, I hadn't heard that before, and I find that very interesting.
I think she's more or less just taking a survey now, but I'm sure she'll run. I'm sure she will.
Well, I wish her all the best, but I again have real misgivings about giving up a fairly progressive Democrat seat to the unknown.
I don't know who. Of course, I don't know anybody that's filed.
Right.
To run.
And we won't see that for a while yet. It's not time.
No. Oh, but there's talk.
There's always talk. I mean, you know, come on. Politics is a blood sport in this neck of the woods. There's always talk.
But I know she can beat both of them, Central Weeks and Bill's going to run too.
Yeah, well, that would be a primary. That would be a fight in the primary.
Too many women like Sally Bob. I can tell you that. The women will put her in there.
Well, you might be right. I don't think Weeks has no record to run on. I mean, he is as useless as a kickstand on a tank or a screen door on a submarine. There's no doubt about that, Mary Lou. But I appreciate your call. That is an interesting prospect. But again, what reasonably progressive member of the House of Delegates does the 27th have now besides Sally Sussman? Sorry to say it, but Virginia Mann's no progressive. Linda Sumner? there's a waste of however much we pay a delegate a year. And, Trying to remember the what's his name? See, I don't even pay enough attention to him to even goon on him. But we do. We've got Dinos all over the place. Democrats in name only. We need another one of them. Yeah, sure. But the other side of that argument is that equally valid and equally correct. Somebody has got. To take the slur off of Raleigh County that is Senator Russ Weeks-minded. I mean, he is routinely spoken of in the halls of the West Virginia Senate as the single dumbest human being occupying an elected seat in that legislature. That says a boatload. I mean, when you got people out there front and tongue-splitting bills and trying to make sure that the churches are, you know, a mile, 900 feet instead of 300 from the tavern door. I mean, it takes some genuine woohoo dumb to be that dumb. So best of luck to whoever tries to unseat what's our buddy Ed call him, Senator Smokey. you can count on me for support. But mercy. Again, can we afford to lose? Yeah, Ron Thompson, the guy whose name I couldn't remember. How delightfully forgettable. But can we really afford to lose Sally in the House? She's a voice of sanity. And again, care to speculate who would run to replace her? How many dandies are there out there? How many people as good as she is? All right, bottom of the hour break time. When we come back, one last little half hour to get your licks in if you want to. 252-6200 is the number. Outside Beckley, 800-620-9967. This is Head On, and, well, me, I'm Bob Kincaid.
WWNR News, a Sunday afternoon accident on Bird Drive has sent an elderly woman to the hospital. Police say 83-year-old Lee Ann Flower of Sophia was headed south on Bird Drive at around 1 o'clock yesterday afternoon. She was trying to turn left onto Appalachian Drive when her car was hit by a tractor trailer. Flower had to be cut from her car, was then taken to Raleigh General, her condition not known today. A Virginia man accused of shooting two brothers, one fatally, at a Raleigh County convenience store, has been returned to face charges. Herman Lee Estes of Bassett, Virginia, was brought back to Beckley last week and is now being held in the Southern Regional Jail. Estes is charged with first-degree murder and malicious wounding after shooting earlier this month at the Little General store in Gent. Police say Estes shot Jeffrey and Jeremy Pratt of Beaver in the parking lot of the store after an altercation. Jeffrey Pratt was dead at the scene. Jeremy was seriously wounded. Estes will remain in jail pending a bond hearing before a circuit clerk. A Beckley man is wanted on child neglect charges after police say he left his two young daughters home alone. Beckley Detective Jeff Shoemate says officers went to the Saunders Avenue home of Jess Durrett on April 8th to investigate alleged drug activity. When they arrived, they found an 18-month-old girl locked in an upstairs bedroom, sleeping in a banana box, while a 2-year-old was found downstairs alone. The girl's mother, Jeannie Durrett, was arrested on a fugitive from justice warrant for a parole violation in Tazewell, Virginia. Jesse Durrett has been charged with child neglect causing substantial risk of serious bodily injury or even death. A West Virginia psychiatrist faces charges after he was arrested this weekend in Boston when security at Logan Airport discovered a loaded gun packed in one of his carry-on bags. Police say 65-year-old Delino H. Webb III of Huntington was arrested Saturday while on his way to catch a Delta Airlines flight home. Webb was released on $500 bail. He's to be arraigned today in East Boston District Court on charges that include possession of an unlicensed handgun and also carrying a weapon in a secured area of the airport. Forecast now for the rest of this evening, cloudy and very chilly and damp tonight, low near 32. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, high only near 50. Partly cloudy tomorrow night, cold again, damp again, low mid-30s. Sunny on Wednesday, though, a little bit warmer, high near 60. Wednesday night, partly cloudy, a little bit warmer with a low near 40. For News Talk 620, this is Carl Mack. When you need to know.
A combination of drugs is significantly more effective than either drug alone for preventing progression of a non-cancerous growth of the prostate gland, according to a new study. Physicians treated more than 3,000 men with benign prostatic hyperplasia, or BPH, in four treatment groups for an average of 4.5 years. Dr. Leroy Nyberg of the National Institute of Diabetes and Digestive and Kidney Diseases says,
we use two drugs, one which is called an alpha blocker, which relaxes the muscle, and that drug is Cardura. And the other drug is the one which actually stops the growth of the prostate, and that is called finasteride. The major finding was that we can stop the growth of the prostate, we can relieve the symptoms, and we can, in a sizable percentage of the patients, prevent them from having surgery.
BPH progressed in only 5% of the men on the two drugs, in 10% on Cardura, in 10% on finasteride, and in 17% on placebo. This is Calvin Jackson, the National Institutes of Health, Bethesda, Maryland.
At the age of 15, the young French-Canadian showed an unusual ability to concentrate behind the wheel. His story next on Biography for Radio.
You wouldn't need instant information if life moved at a slow pace.
But life moves at the speed of light, and you've got to keep up.
There is a way to stay on top of your credit report instantly online. Get your free credit report at freecreditreport.com. Join the millions who have already logged on.
I go online, and in seconds, I get my credit report.
Staying on top of my credit helped me get the best deal on my refi.
Why wait when you can instantly see your credit report online, free?
Stay on top of your credit at freecreditreport.com.
As a boy growing up in a riverside town in Quebec, he was surrounded by fast cars. His father and uncle were both race car drivers with the daredevil courage that fascinated the young boy. When he was 11, his father died in a racing accident in Belgium. The death crushed the family, but didn't change the boy's plans. At 13, he told his mother he wanted to race cars. She promised that if he improved his grades in math, he could try kart racing. He kept his part of the deal, and she kept hers. 2 years later, he enrolled in a driving school, and soon he was racing in Formula 3 championships. The slight but high-spirited driver quickly gained recognition, not only for his driving, but for his penchant for changing his hair color and dating beautiful women. He began winning prizes at Indy races, taking accidents in his stride. Then in 1997, in a harrowing race that included a crash with Michael Schumacher, he snagged the Formula 1 World Championship. In the years following, his performance on the track flagged, but no one could take away his glory as the first Canadian ever to win the world championship. Race driver, Jacques Villeneuve. For Biography, I'm Lawrence Scott.
Biography is a trademark of A&D.
A guy who's in no rush, Philly Savage, Bob Kincaid.
We're back. About 24 minutes left before 10 o'clock. I'm Bob Kincaid, and this last one is a dandy. From Reuters, headline, Evolution on Trial as Kansas Debates Adam versus Darwin. And this also came to us from our good friend Stephen across the pond. What is it now? 75, 80 years since the Scopes Monkey Trial? Yeah, 80 years after a famed courtroom battle in Tennessee pitted religious beliefs about the origins of life against the theories of British scientist Charles Darwin, Kansas is holding its own hearings on what school children should be taught about how life on Earth began. The Kansas Board of Education has scheduled 6 days of courtroom-style hearings to begin on Thursday in the capital, Topeka. That's this Thursday. I wonder if they're selling tickets. More than 24 witnesses will give testimony and be subject to cross-examination, with the majority expected to argue against teaching evolution. Of course, maybe some of them will come down with a cold before Thursday, because one of those little rhinoviruses evolved from the last one that they had, and they were therefore unimmune. Nah, it's an evil spirit that causes the cold. Many prominent U.S. scientific groups, scientists, don't they understand that the world's only 5,000 years old? Because that's what it says in a bad translation of Hebrew into Elizabethan English. Many prominent U.S. scientific groups have denounced the debate as founded on fallacy and have promised to boycott the hearings, which opponents say are part of a larger nationwide effort by religious interests to gain control over government. The word is theocracy. T-H-E-O-C-R-A-C-Y, theocracy. And it is what they want. Oh, God, it's what the, it is what these demonic religion industry despots, they eat it, they sleep it, they breathe it, they want it, they yearn for it. I feel like I'm in a time warp here, said Topeka attorney Pedro Irigonegaray. Wow. Who has agreed to defend evolution as valid science. To debate evolution is similar to debating whether the earth is round. It's an absurd proposition. Irigonegaray, there we go. His opponent will be attorney John Calvert, managing director of the Intelligent Design Network, a Kansas organization that argues the earth was created through intentional design rather than random organism evolution. The group is one of many that have been formed over the last several years to challenge the validity of evolutionary concepts. In other words, to pervert the young, growing, delicate minds of children to teach them superstition instead of rational thought, reason, and common sense. Now, Mr. Irigonegaray is going to stand up manfully and fight this fight. He will be in the shoes of Clarence Darrow. Apparently this Calvert creep will be in the shoes of William Jennings Bryan. Now, I don't know, honest to God, I do not know what plans for defense or what assertions Mr. Irigonegaray has. But were I him, I would, I wish I had an email, I would suggest this to him. I would strongly suggest that he rely in large part on that greatest of American writers. In my book, these two are co-equal, and I've not yet decided who is the greater of the two, Benjamin Franklin or Samuel Langhorne Clemens. I suspect it's Clemens. And the most beautiful refutation of any of this intelligent design stupidity is to be had in a piece from Samuel Clemens, Mark Twain, entitled Letters from the Earth. He writes, among other things, I'm going to share some of this with you, that innocent Bible tells about the creation of what? The universe. Yes, the universe in 6 days. God did it. He did not call it the universe. Here, wait a minute. Let me get into Mark Twain mode. He did not call it the universe. That name is modern. His whole attention was upon this world. He constructed it in 5 days, and then it took him only one day to make 20 million suns and 80 million planets. What were they for, according to this idea? To furnish light for this little toy world. That was his whole purpose. He had no other. One of the 20 million suns, the smallest one, was to light it in the daytime. The rest were to help one of the universe's countless moons modify the darkness of its nights. And he goes on at some length. The Sunday school still teaches the child that Arcturus was created to help light this earth, and the child grows up and continues to believe it long after he has found out that the probabilities are against it being so. According to the book and its servants, the universe is only 6,000 years old. It is only within the last 100 years that studious, inquiring minds have found out that it is nearer 100 million. He made a man and a woman and placed them in a pleasant garden, along with the other creatures. They all lived together there in harmony and contentment and blooming youth for some time. Then trouble came. God had warned the man and the woman that they must not eat of the fruit of a certain tree. And he added a most strange remark. He said that if they ate of it, they should surely die. Strange for the reason that inasmuch as they had never seen a sample death, they could not possibly know what he meant. Neither would he nor any other god have been able to make those ignorant children understand what was meant without furnishing a sample. The mere word could have no meaning for them any more than it would have for an infant of days. Presently, a serpent sought them out privately. and came to them walking upright, which was the way of serpents in those days. The serpent said the forbidden fruit would store their vacant minds with knowledge. So they ate it, which was quite natural, for man is so made that he eagerly wants to know, whereas the priest, like God, whose imitator and representative he is, has made it his business from the beginning to keep him from knowing any useful thing. Adam and Eve ate the forbidden fruit, and at once a great light streamed into their dim heads. They had acquired knowledge. What knowledge? Useful knowledge? No, merely knowledge that there was such a thing as good and such a thing as evil. And how to do evil. They couldn't do it before. Therefore, all their acts up to this time had been without stain, without blame, without offense. But now they could do evil and suffer for it. Now they had acquired what the church calls an invaluable possession, the moral sense. That sense which differentiates man from the beast and sets him above the beast, instead of below the beast, where one would suppose his proper place would be, since he is always foul-minded and guilty, and the beast always clean-minded and innocent. It is like valuing a watch that must go wrong above a watch that can't. The church still prizes the moral sense as man's noblest asset today. Although the church knows God had a distinctly poor opinion of it, and did what he could in his clumsy way to keep his happy children of the garden from acquiring it. Very well, Adam and Eve now knew what evil was and how to do it. They knew how to do various kinds of wrong things, and among them, one principal one, the one God had in his mind on principally. That one was the art and mystery of sexual intercourse. To them, it was a magnificent discovery, and they stopped idling around and turned their entire attention to it, poor exultant young things. In the midst of one of these celebrations, they heard God walking among the bushes, which was an afternoon custom of his, and they were smitten with fright. Why? Because they were naked. They had not known it before. They had not minded it before. Neither had God. In that memorable moment, immodesty was born, and some people have valued it ever since, though it would certainly puzzle them to explain why. Adam and Eve entered the world naked and unashamed, naked and pure-minded, and no descendant of theirs has ever entered it otherwise. All have entered it naked, unashamed, and clean in mind. They have entered it modest. They have had to acquire immodesty and the soiled mind. There was no other way to get it. A Christian mother's first duty is to soil her child's mind, and she does not neglect it. Her lad grows up to be a missionary and goes to the innocent savage and to the civilized Japanese and soils their minds, whereupon they adopt immodesty. They conceal their bodies and stop bathing naked together. To proceed with the biblical curiosities. Naturally, you will think that the threat to punish Adam and Eve for disobeying was, of course, not carried out, since they did not create themselves, nor their natures, nor their impulses, nor their weaknesses, and hence were not properly subject to anyone's commands, and not responsible to anybody for their acts. It will surprise you to know that the threat was carried out. Adam and Eve were punished, and that crime finds apologists unto this day. The sentence of death was executed. As you perceive, the only person responsible for the couple's offense escaped, and not only escaped, but became the executioner of the innocent. In your country and mine, we should have the privilege of making fun of this kind of morality, but it would be unkind to do it here. Many of these people have the reasoning faculty, but no one uses it in religious matters. The best minds will tell you that when a man has begotten a child, he is morally bound to tenderly care for it, protect it from hurt, shield it from disease, clothe it, feed it, bear with its waywardness, lay no hand upon it save in kindness and for its own good, and never in any case inflict upon it a wanton cruelty. God's treatment of his earthly children, and every day and every night, is the exact opposite of all of that. Yet those best minds warmly justify these crimes, condone them, excuse them, and indignantly refuse to regard them as crimes at all when he commits them. Your country and mine is an interesting one, but there is nothing there that is half so interesting as the human mind. Very well. God banished Adam and Eve from the garden and eventually assassinated them, all for disobeying a command which he had no right to utter. But he did not stop there, as you will see. He has one code of morals for himself and quite another for his children. He requires his children to deal justly and gently with offenders and forgive them 77 times, whereas he deals neither justly nor gently with anyone, and he did not forgive the ignorant and thoughtless first pair of juveniles even their first small offense and say, "Ah, you may go free this time, and I will give you another chance." Nope. On the contrary, he elected to punish their children all through the ages to the end of time for a trifling offense committed by others before they were born. He is punishing them yet. In mild ways? No, in atrocious ones. You would not suppose that this kind of being gets many compliments. Undeceive yourself. The world calls him the all-just, the all-righteous, the all-good, the all-merciful, the all-forgiving, the all-truthful, the all-loving, the source of all morality. These sarcasms are uttered daily, all over the world. But not as conscious sarcasms. No, they are meant seriously. They are uttered without a smile. Now, this is the part that they're going to love in Topeka. Letter 5, Letters from the Earth, Mark Twain. Noah began to collect animals. There was to be one couple of each and every sort of creature that walked or crawled or swam or flew in the world of animated nature. We have to guess at how long it took to collect the creatures and how much it cost, for there is no record of these details. Merely quadrupeds and alligators, you understand. No birds, no snakes, no frogs, no worms, no lice, no rats, no fleas, no ticks, no caterpillars, no spiders, no houseflies, no mosquitoes, nothing but just plain simple quadrupeds and alligators were used for the Roman games. No quadrupeds except fighting ones. Yet it was, as I have said, it took up to 3 years to collect them in the case of Symmachus, and the cost of animals and transportation and the men's wages footed up to $4,500,000. He goes on. This is precious stuff. Let's see here. Then at last Noah sailed, and none too soon. For the ark was only just sinking out of sight on the horizon when the monsters arrived, and added their lamentations to those of the multitude of weeping fathers and mothers and frightened little children who were clinging to the wave-washed rocks in the pouring rain and lifting imploring prayers to an all-just and all-forgiving and all-pitying being who never answered a prayer since those crags were builded, grain by grain, out of the sands, and still would not have answered one when the ages should have crumbled them to sand again. On the third day, however, about noon, it was found that a fly had been left behind. The return voyage turned out to be long and difficult on account of the lack of chart and compass and because of the changed aspects of all the coasts. But the fly was found at last and received on board with hymns of praise and gratitude, the family standing meanwhile uncovered out of reverence for its divine origin. It was weary and worn, that little fly was, and had suffered somewhat from the weather, but was otherwise in good estate. Men and their families had died of hunger on barren mountaintops, but it had not lacked for food, the multitudinous corpses furnishing it in rank and rotten richness. This was the sacred bird providentially preserved. Providentially, that is the word. For the fly had not been left behind by accident. No, the hand of providence was in it. There are no accidents. All things that happen, happen for a purpose. They are foreseen from the beginning of time. They are ordained from the beginning of time. From the dawn of creation, the Lord had foreseen that Noah, being alarmed and confused by the invasion of the prodigious brevet fossils, would prematurely fly to sea unprovided with a certain invaluable disease. He would have all the other diseases and could distribute them among the new races of men as they appeared in the world. But he would lack one of the very best, typhoid fever, a malady which, with the circumstances are especially favorable, is able to utterly wreck a patient without killing him, for it can restore him to his feet with a long life in him, and yet deaf, dumb, blind, crippled, and idiotic. The house fly is its main disseminator, and is more competent and more calamitously effective than all other distributors of the dreaded scourge put together. And so by foreordination from the beginning of time, this fly was left behind to seek out a typhoid corpse and feed upon its corruptions and gall its legs with germs and transmit them to the repeopled world for permanent business. From that one housefly, in the ages that have since elapsed, billions of sick beds have been stocked, billions of wrecked bodies sent tottering about the earth, and billions of cemeteries recruited with the dead. If Mr. Irigonigare will but read from the letters from the earth the anti-science, anti-knowledge, anti-thought weirdos will have to run and hide. Because that great man wrote that in the 19th century, and nothing has since been writ to begin to match it for its force. Good luck, Mr. Irigonigare. Let's go to the phones. Wayne's with us. Hey, Wayne, you're head on. Hey, Wayne.
Hey, how you doing?
What's going on?
I don't know, man. Talking about coming in the middle of something.
That's all right.
I certainly did, because I don't have the slightest idea what you're talking about.
No, just this evolutionary debate out in Kansas.
Okay. You were talking about one of the diseases. Was one of those, which disease was greed? Because that's our worst disease that we have right now.
Oh, without a doubt.
Exactly. You know, like I say, I got right in the middle of this thing, but
that's okay.
I'm upset by oil companies that can announce 44% increases in profits for the first quarter as opposed to the last quarter. And the president's answer to the energy situation is to give these poor oil companies massive tax breaks.
Well, they need it, because you got to understand, Wayne. And
listen, I know the guy on the morning show can explain this to me, but
they're
going to have a harder time.
No, see, they have to have those tax breaks, because even with those $44 billion in profits, they came in under expectations.
Oh, I know. The stock market fell.
Yeah.
The stock market fell because they only increased profits 44%. There's that disease, that greed.
Yeah.
And that's what has consumed this country.
A disease of the heart that may be cured only by gold.
Right. And the people are letting it happen.
Sure.
There are people that, what's the proper word? They support these people. They enable them, I guess.
Well, Wayne...
Is that a good word?
Yeah,
I don't know.
I had a conversation with an erstwhile Republican over the weekend.
Okay.
This guy considers himself a Republican, and I just sat there and began ticking things off. You know, Bush policies. And periodically I'd say, do you agree with that? No. Because I wasn't assigning party to it. You know, the estate tax for the rich, eliminating that. Do you agree with that? No. Do you agree with making it harder for granny to pass her farm on to the daughter that cares for her when she's sick and senile? Or should the government just be able to come and take it away? Do you agree with that? No. Do you agree with do you agree that the Social Security indebtedness in Treasury bills, do you agree that those are worthless IOUs? No. And I mean, there must have been a list of 10 or 15 of these no's, Wayne.
Right.
And I finally just said, then how in God's holy name can you call yourself a Republican?
Was there an answer?
And he said, well, what do you mean? I said, every last thing I just laid out to you is a Bush Republican policy.
They are.
And he said, that can't be. I said, no, don't give me it can't be. It already is. Now, you deal with the fact that you voted for that. And he just looked me in the eye and he said, by God, never again.
I think the worst thing there is that you continue to support it.
Right.
You fell for the dude, but my God.
Right.
Look what he's doing.
It's terrifying.
Oh, yes, it is.
I mean,
when you have common working, I don't know if you call it, I don't know.
Working stiffs.
Right, that support these people and will defend them.
I know, and then... And Pat Robertson comes out yesterday and says that liberal activist judges, most of which were appointed by Republican presidents, are more of a threat now to this country than Hitler was?
Yes.
I mean, that's one of those...
They
run screaming around the rooms things.
And they get upset that Robert Byrd uses the word fascism or compares this time to then.
Yeah, I guess there's a double standard.
I would say so.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, no, all we can do is fight it. All we can do is do what I did the other night and sit there and just tick them off. Just tell them this is a Republican policy. This is. Do you agree with that? I mean, it galls me to think that I guess it's over by now. I don't know, Wayne. But God only knows what was going on in that little Clavern meeting, passing itself off as the Lincoln Day dinner this evening.
Where was that? That's why Shelley Moore was here.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Weren't we giddy this morning?
Were we giddy? Were we all a titter?
Huh?
Were we all a titter?
Well, yes. Well, half was all a titter. if you know what
get,
I mean.
Yeah, don't get me in trouble.
No.
Should have left that one alone. But yeah, I got an email from Boo Boo who said just a love fest.
Yeah, well, and did you know that Nick Rahal won't go on that show?
Really?
Yeah.
I'll be darned.
Oh, yeah, you know. Yeah, he's afraid. He's afraid.
Well, you know, I learned my Bible as a little boy, and not, you know, here's for young David sitting down to a table prepared for him in the presence of his enemies. But that doesn't mean the rest of us have to.
That's exactly right.
You know, Nick, and Nick's been on this show. Nick knows he's welcome here anytime he wants to. I don't do a lot of in-studio guests, but, you know, that's what's cool about it. You know, anybody who's